Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my regular colleague, Ezra Ginsberg, and filling in for the vacationing Richard Pollock, we welcome from IllegalCurve.com, Dave Manouk. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is Jeremy Rutherford to talk about the Winnipeg Jets division rival St. Louis Blues. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, lots to get to on this Saturday morning. Before we do so, I say hello to you. How are you both doing?
Hello to you guys as well. Dave M is you know, filling the chair for Richie here. Drew, we've spent the last 3 days together
sick
now.
Sick of you, really.
We're hanging out a lot. Excited to talk some hockey here on this lovely Saturday afternoon.
You know, boys, it feels good to be back in the studio with you guys, and I'm excited to have a little bit of hockey talk, a little bit of Jet stuff, and some NHL news as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's still sort of the very quiet time in the hockey world. That shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. But things are beginning to pick up slowly but surely. We figure next week is the last of the really, really quiet weeks. And then right after Labor Day, you know, starting on, you know, very early in September, especially with the early start to this year's season, given that it's an Olympic year, we have the prospects camp, which is going to take place that one day at the Iceplex, and then the team, the prospects, all jet off to Penticton to play in the Vancouver Canucks Young Stars tournament. And you know, once that's done, and then you know that'll take you through the first weekend in September. You come back and it's full training camp.
Yeah, the vets report on the 11th.
Yeah, the vets report on September 11th, and before you know it, I mean, you know, the first exhibition game will be here, and the regular season is, you know, what, 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away, that Tuesday, October 1st game in Edmonton. I mean, it's amazing how quickly it's coming up upon us.
Dog days are over. This is probably the, as you mentioned, the quietest 2 weeks of the season, of the hockey season. And, you know, hockey players right now at this point are training and, you know, getting their ducks in a row right now. And you mentioned prospect camp. There's Team Canada orientation camp that begins tomorrow. There isn't any on-ice hockey, but there's going to be a lot of off-ice education and training. And, you know, I think if you ask most people, most hockey fans around town, they're ready to go here. I mean, it's still, you know, beautiful outside, and it's still 30 degrees Celsius, but I think people are ready to go. I think there has been enough, you know, quiet time here, and everybody's ready to find out, you know, who's going to be on what line for the Jets and everything like that. So it's exciting.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Ezzy. There's nothing else sort of keeping the attention of sports fans in Winnipeg. The Bombers are obviously a lost cause. You know, that game, 12 noon on TSN, you can catch them in Guelph against the Tiger Cats. The Goldeyes are making a bit of a run at it, so that's something to sort of keep people's interest in the meantime. They won last night in Sioux Falls again, their fourth straight victory for the Goldeyes to, you know, keep in the pace and keep in the running for that wild card spot in the American Association. But like you said, Ezzy, it's about to be all Jets all the time before you know it.
Yeah, the Jets right now are the focus of everyone, because Drew, because the truth is there's really not much else to talk about in the city. So people are talking about, like, literally anything. Like, well, right now the discussion seems to be focused on, like, what the line combinations are going to be, which is, of course, hard to say because we still don't know how it'll kind of all fall out with some of the younger players. But that's what people want to talk about. People want to talk about who is going to be the second line center, who is going to be on the third line, who's going to be on the fourth line. First line, obviously, we know who is our first line already.
And Dave, in addition to that, there was no training camp last year. So this training camp is really important. And you have, as you mentioned, all of these battles happening for forward spots, but you also have Jacob Trouba coming in and proving himself in training camp. He has to establish himself and work hard. And Claude Noel did not have any time to prepare last year with his players. I mean, everyone came in from wherever they were during the lockout, unless some of the Jets were obviously in Winnipeg. But you know, this is extremely important, and you're going to have battles on the third and fourth lines. You're going to have guys that are trying to get that last spot. Paul Postma, for example, is wanting to prove himself and you know, get a spot in the bottom pair there. So, you know,
he'd prefer a spot in the top pair, but he's got to be realistic.
No, absolutely. But, you know, when you consider that no NHL team had training camp this year, I think this makes it even more important.
And the prospects, let's talk about the prospect camp. It's coming up starting, you know, just after Labor Day, like we mentioned, and they go off to the Young Stars tournament. You know, how much weight do you put into that tournament? Do you think it's really essential for a guy like Mark Scheifele or Jacob Trouba or Adam Lowry? Or do you think that, you know, they can sort of get their feet under them and then coast into big camp shortly thereafter?
Well, Drew, let's put it out there right off the bat. You know, prospect camp isn't going to make or break Mark Scheifele's chances of making the team. I think we'd all agree with that. Mm-hmm. But Craig Heisinger was on Hustler and Lawless with Richie and yourself, mm-hmm. and he was talking about it. And this prospect camp is exponentially more important than Winnipeg Jets development camp. Winnipeg Jets development camp, Dave, as you know, is more of an identification camp. It's a chance for the prospects to socialize, to meet each other, get themselves acquainted, or, you know, there's the odd guy who wasn't drafted and he can maybe make a name for himself. But prospect camp, and you know, for those who don't know, there are going to be actual exhibition games taking place. So, I mean, it is important, and I would say it's probably more important for players like Lucas Sutter or Adam Lowry, who have an outside chance at making the Jets. Adam Lowry most likely will play for the Ice Caps, but it is important, and it is going to set the stage for training camp for a lot of these guys. That's, I think, the most important thing about prospects camp.
You mentioned Lucas Sutter. When we had Craig Heisinger on, I believe it was Wednesday, Richie and I had him on H&L when we were filling in. I thought his comments about Lucas Sutter were quite pointed and about as critical as in my opinion, the Jets organization ever gets about anyone. He pretty much said that, you know, he had a very lousy year last year, which the numbers bear that out. But he said they need to see more from Lucas Sutter, and I think that from Sutter's point of view, now I don't expect Lucas Sutter is going to be on the Winnipeg Jets this year, but I think the prospect camp sort of is important to him to show the team that he's back on the right path in terms of his development, especially after a down year in junior last year in the WHL.
Well, absolutely, and Dave, Lucas Sutter was a 2011 draft pick, as Scheifele was, and as Lowry was, and He didn't have a good year for the Saskatoon Blades in the WHL last year, and you know, everyone knows that. And he for someone like him who is going to have to play a few years in the AHL at least before he's going to get into the NHL, similar to an Adam Lowry, I think that he's taken a bit of a step back. But for Trouba and Scheifele, this is the first step towards everything they're going to go through up until the season starts.
I think you're right, Az. I think you said it best when you said this is just setting the stage for them. They're just getting their feet wet. They're going to be in there, you know, but you're right. This isn't going to make or break their chances of making the team, like a guy like Scheifele or a guy like Trouba. But Drew, you're right. Lucas Sutter needs to take a step forward because he's only taken steps back in his development. And the team clearly isn't happy when you've got Heisinger coming on radio and talking about it. So there's a clear focus on someone like that he needs to kind of reorganize his thought process and really change his focus and get, you know, thinking about if he wants to be an NHL player within the Winnipeg Jets organization.
And another thing that we should mention too, now that we've had three draft years for the Winnipeg Jets, a guy like Lucas Sutter, it's not going to get easier for him to find a role. The Jets are already a young team, but you throw in Nick Petan, JC Lipon, all of these guys that have been drafted. I mean, he's not getting younger now. He's 20 years old, and he has to find a role for himself in the organization. And, you know, with other younger players from the 2012 and 2013 draft coming up, you know, for him, I would say this is more important possibly than any other draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets.
Sure, the organization depth is far better than it was, you know, like 2-3 years ago, where anybody that really was drafted by the organization almost had as good of a shot at making it as the next guy. That now that's not the case. Everybody's they're getting developed in a more patient manner, and somebody who isn't putting in the effort or isn't developing in the manner that the team expects is no longer just getting a handout to go straight into the organization into a prominent role.
Right, and the bloodlines are obvious. Everybody knows what family he comes from, the great Sutter hockey family, but the reality is you still have to make you know, a name for yourself and earn a spot, whether it's in St. John's or the Jets, right? And most likely it'll be in St. John's for this foreseeable future.
It seems to be the case with Lucas Sutter. He's obviously going to have to change things in his development. We had Mark Scheifele yesterday on Hustler and Lawless with us. He was at the Gary Roberts development camp in Toronto, the BioSteel camp, talking about his summer and his offseason and his training program. We thought we'd play the audio from that interview in case you missed it yesterday. This is Ezzy and myself interviewing Mark Scheifele. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what Scheifele had to say. Let's go to that audio from yesterday's Hustler and Lawless. Shortly past, half past the hour, welcome back to Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Manitoba Liquor Marts. Win bomber tickets with Manitoba Liquor Marts. Scan your Air Miles collector card in August and September, and you'll be automatically entered for a chance to win one of two pairs of tickets to a Winnipeg Blue Bomber home game. Check out liquormarts.ca for all the details.
Hustler and Lawless Hotline, brought to you by Chris Pennycook of Royal LePage Dynamic Realty,
204-989-5000.
We welcome back to Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290, Winnipeg Jets forward Mark Scheifele. Mark, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Mark, you've got to start with where you're at, and that's at the BioSteel camp in Toronto. First of all, can you tell our audience what the BioSteel camp is all about, and then we'll get into more of the details of it a little bit later on.
Well, it's just a lot of the, you know, pro guys from around Toronto skate and work out every day at St. Mike's. So it was a pretty good week, and you know, we had a scrimmage the last day, so it was a good fun week overall.
Who's harder on you, Matt Nichol or Gary Roberts?
Gary definitely is, just because, you know, I trained with him during the summer, so he's definitely the harder one on me.
Mark, we've heard about some of the work that Gary Roberts has done with players such as Steven Stamkos and many others. And for a young hockey player like yourself, who's you've said your main goal is to make the Winnipeg Jets next year, what are the hockey-specific things that you've been working on with Gary Roberts?
Well, you know, a big thing is my overall strength, and Gary does a great job with that. You know, he has a different program for each guy and is in the program. So, you know, my current program throughout the summer has really helped my overall strength, has helped me, you know, get to the next level kind of thing in my body development. So, I think my summers went very well, has been very good. Very good this year. And I think it's been my best summer for my whole career.
Is it primarily core strength that they're working on improving, like upper body, lower body, or is it just sort of the entire package?
It's definitely the entire package. Obviously, a lot is focused on lower body and core, but there's, you know, also my upper body has seen big gains in it. So I've seen gains in my entire body, so it's helped, and, you know, being on the ice has felt that much better. So it's been a very good summer.
Mark, you know, at Winnipeg Jets development camp that took place earlier this summer at the MTS Iceplex, everyone was talking about the strength and the weight that you've had. So we were wondering if you could give us an exact, you know, pound by pound, you know, weight that you're at right now. How much weight have you actually put on this summer?
Well, I weighed in today and I was at 196. So I've put on, you know, since the end of the year, I've put on like 18 pounds.
Wow.
That's... So it's been a good one.
And obviously you got, you know, you need it because the training camp is upcoming and the Young Stars tournament is upcoming in Penticton, BC, where you're going to be representing the Winnipeg Jets. You know, what do you hope to achieve for yourself at that Young Stars tournament and at the, you know, sort of the prospect camp right before the main training camp opens for the Jets this year?
Well, it's a good tournament. It's a fun tournament to be in. I played in my first year, and it's a nice place in Penticton, and I think a big thing is to, you know, get kind of into game shape. It's you know, it's early, and, you know, guys haven't played games in, you know, in a while. So it's kind of, you know, get your legs under you, get your game form going, and then, you know, go into main camp from there. Well, it'll just help you, you know, I think, have that game kind of mentality in your mind, and it'll help you kind of prepare for it.
You're listening to Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're talking to Winnipeg Jets forward Mark Scheifele. Mark, if you look at the Winnipeg Jets roster, there's obviously sort of a gaping hole for a centerman. Fortunately, that's where you come in your role as a centerman. You know, do you put any added pressure on yourself knowing what the team is expecting of you this coming season, or are you just trying to, you know, control what you can control?
Well, yeah, obviously I've looked at the depth chart and, you know, see where I can fit in. I think that's what most guys will do. But I think, you know, I focus on what I need to do, and you know, Gary's helped me a lot this summer on you know, trying to work towards achieving my goal, and I think I just have to go on and do what I control and, you know, work my hardest and do what it takes to reach my goal, and that goal is to be on that team.
Mark, have you had any conversations with Claude Noel or anybody else on the coaching staff about possibly playing another position? Obviously, that would be a wing position.
I haven't lately. Obviously, I played a little bit of wing back at the beginning of this season. So, but as far as I know, I've been playing center in Barrie, so that's the most I've heard, and I think that's but any position really, you know, I'd play any position to be on the Jets. So it's just, you know, controlling what you can control. If they put you on wing, play your hardest on wing. If they put you on center, you know, play your hardest at center. So that's kind of the outlook I have on it.
Along those same lines, Mark, if it ends up that, you know, you make the team and you play a couple games and it looks like you might need some more seasoning in the AHL with St. John's, would that be a personal disappointment to you, or would that just be what you figure is just another stepping stone in your development as an NHL player?
Obviously it would be a disappointment. You know, obviously I wanted to be with Winnipeg this year and the year before, but getting sent down to Barrie, it was obviously a disappointment. But, you know, I honestly think it's not really even in my mind. It's my mindset is to be on Winnipeg and not even to think about anything else. It's about my goal and what I have to achieve, and not even having a kind of a backup plan right now.
Mark, we talked about the fact that you were at Winnipeg Jets development camp earlier in the summer, and now you're at BioSteel camp, working out with Gary Roberts and others. Have you had any chance to do anything that's not hockey related, or is it just all hockey all the time for you because you're trying to get in the lineup full time next year?
It's been pretty much hockey all the time, like occasional golf game with, you know, my family and some friends. But, you know, for the most part, it's pretty much all hockey. You know, working out 6 days a week and resting when you're not working out. So it's been basically geared towards hockey. But that makes me happy. You know, being on the ice and working out makes me feel good and makes me happy because, you know, I'm doing something I love.
Mark, we'll let you go on this last question. In the offseason, have you had the chance or have you been in contact with any of your Winnipeg Jets teammates to sort of see how their summers have been going and to make sure you guys are all on the same page entering training camp and what everyone expects to be a very important year for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I've definitely talked to a few guys. I've talked to, you know, Zach Bogosian a lot, just to, you know, just talking about random things. He's one of my good buddies. You know, Ladd has texted me a few times just seeing how the summer is going, so it was good to talk to him and, you know, a few other guys. So it's good to have already made relationships with some of the guys and, you know, looking to build on those for sure.
Did you ask Bogo for a loan? Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on Hustler and Lawless, and best of luck when you're in town, and then best of luck in Penticton.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, Mark.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and from IllegalCurve.com, Dave Manouk. Gentlemen, Mark Scheifele interview, we just played it. It was from yesterday's Hustler and Lawless. I hope our audience found it as entertaining as we did when it happened yesterday initially. You know, it strikes me that this is a guy who's got a singular mindset, and that singular mindset is to make the Winnipeg Jets, and anything less than that will be an unmitigated failure in his mind.
And I really appreciate the honesty coming from Mark Scheifele. And it's funny how Mark Scheifele will incite more debate than anyone, and rightfully so. He's the first ever Winnipeg Jets 2.0 draft pick. And some people believe that he should spend a season in the AHL. And they're probably right to make that argument. But the fact that Mark Scheifele spent two more years in Barrie after he was drafted, and obviously he played a little bit for the Jets and a little bit for the Icecaps, I think, you know, supersedes that. And I think that Mark Scheifele will make the team, and the only way he ends up playing any time in the AHL is if he really struggles.
You and I had this discussion yesterday on Hustler and Lawless, and we had this actually discussion just off air when we were prepping for the show earlier this morning. If Mark Scheifele is not, in my opinion, and Ezzy, I think you disagree with me, my opinion is if Mark Scheifele is not the Winnipeg Jets' second line center for the majority of this year, this is not a playoff team.
Right.
I think is that a little simplistic? Yeah, but I think to some extent, it is that simple.
But we also have to realize that Mark Scheifele is not the Messiah either.
I'm not saying he's the Messiah.
And I think that when you're talking about Mark Scheifele, his first full year in the NHL, Dave, I think you have to look at how he does based on his own performance and not what he brings to the team. And I think that's there's going to be a problem if everyone puts the entire season or the success or failure of the Jets on one or two players.
But
the fact that Mark Scheifele is ready to go, he's gained weight, he's training with Gary Roberts, he looks good, he's skating better, he's gained strength in his lower body and upper body is the most important thing. Now, I think he will play full-time on the Winnipeg Jets, but to think that Mark Scheifele is going to spend 82 games as a second-line center in the Western Conference in his rookie year, I think is naive. Now, I'm not saying that he won't spend some time as the second-line center, and I don't disagree with you, Drew. I do think that the ultimate success or failure of the Jets will have a lot to do with how he does, because second-line center is a very important position. Well, I just think that he's going to have his struggles.
I don't think it's the public putting the pressure necessarily on Mark Scheifele to fill that role. I think if you look at the Winnipeg Jets roster and the manner it's constructed, the Jets organization has, you know, not obviously in so many terms, but they've more or less assigned that second-line role to him, assuming that he can fill it. Because without him there, we saw that Olli Jokinen can't do the job last year. Now, in my opinion, it's hard for me to believe he's going to be as bad as he was last year. I think by default, he'll be better. But I still don't think that Mark Scheifele as the third-line center and Olli Jokinen as the second-line center means this is a playoff team. I think Mark Scheifele does have to fill that second-line role, and the Jets organization themselves have set themselves up for him to play that role.
You know, it's tough. I mean, clearly the fans have expectations. Clearly Mark Scheifele has expectations. So, you know, we won't know anything until really how training camp goes and how he meshes with, you know, Kane and Setoguchi. Now, clearly, in my mind, he is the guy who has to play the second-line center role, because we saw with Jokinen. I'm with you, Drew. I actually think Jokinen will bounce back. I think he'll have a better year this year than he did last year. But
he can't have a worse year.
Well, no, that's true. Well, he could, but anyways, the point I'm making is that I think that Scheifele has to fill that role because he's going to be the playmaker. He's going to be the passer to Kane and Setoguchi as the shooters. So, like, and the reality is, who else are you putting in that two center role if it's not Mark Scheifele? And as you guys discussed with him yesterday, he's clearly put on the size. He's taken it seriously. He's not, I'm the 2011 first round draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets, I'm just going to sit on that and rest on my laurels because that's sufficient. He's at the point where he said, I need to do something to take it to the next level. He was an overage junior, right? Mm-hmm. He really was a man amongst boys.
Last year. Yes.
So he dominated, but he should dominate. He's in junior and he should be dominating because he's at that point where he's not an 18-year-old.
He's playing against 16-year-old kids.
That's right. Yep. So look, we saw it in the playoffs. He was dominant.
World junior tournament as well. He was good.
He's better. He improved. Yep. He's improved steadily. Now, we've seen a seriousness this summer to take his training to that next level. He spent the summer with Gary Roberts. Now people will quibble as to whether he's gained 18 pounds of muscle or not. And the truth is, we're not there with our instruments to test his body fat or any of that other stuff. It's really irrelevant. If he says he's put on 18 pounds, he's put on 18 pounds.
Well, I want to jump in there really quick, Dave. Sorry to interrupt you, but right after we did that interview and we just replayed it last segment, you know, people on Twitter were, you know, challenging us, and Mark Scheifele said it himself. So it's from the horse's mouth. Mark Scheifele said that he's gained 18 pounds since last summer, or since the end of the season. And the reality is, and again, you know, he's not also measuring every day, he's not weighing himself every day, but he knows how much he weighs and he is weighing himself, but he's 196 pounds. What you have to take from that is that he's gained weight and that his strength and conditioning is going well. How pound by pound exactly how much weight he gained is not important. The fact is he has gained weight, and you know that's going to add strength and help him in his first NHL season.
And he'll certainly need that if he's going to go to the wars of the Western Conference in a night in night out basis. The Winnipeg Jets need that, and obviously Mark Scheifele for his professional development needs that. It's only a matter of weeks until we find out and we can see for ourselves how he looks on the ice. We're all looking forward to that. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post Dispatch is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford. Jeremy, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, no problem.
Jeremy, when you look at the Blues roster right now, you look at the Blues organization right now, there's one big name that jumps out to everybody, and that's restricted free agent defenseman Alex Pietrangelo. You know, still not signed. He's going to be in Calgary this weekend for the Team Canada orientation camp, but like I said, not signed yet to a contract with the Blues. Can you give our audience an update on how those negotiations are going?
Yeah, it doesn't appear that there's anything really going on right now. I've traded emails with Donnie Meehan and his agent in the last couple days, and he said nothing new to report. I think both sides know where each other stand, and you know, this is a deadline league, whether it be the trade deadline or arbitration hearing deadline, and it seems like things don't get done until there is a deadline, and obviously the next one is the start of training camp players reporting for physicals, I think here in St. Louis on September 11th. So I think this is something that may go down to the wire between the Blues and Alex Pietrangelo, because they are quite a bit far apart.
Jeremy, you mentioned Don Meehan, and for our listeners who aren't aware, Don Meehan is from Newport Sports, and he's Alex Pietrangelo's agent. And given that Pietrangelo is represented by Don Meehan, and Meehan has had three players engage in contract holdouts over the last couple of years, do you think there's a fear within the Blues organization that there's going to be a situation where Pietrangelo is going to hold out, possibly during training camp and maybe even the start of the season?
Yeah, it's nothing that, general manager Doug Armstrong has said, even privately. He hasn't, expressed any worry about that. But I know that dating back several months ago, the Blues were certainly aware of who Alex Pietrangelo is represented by, Don Meehan and Newport, and the fact that they did have a couple holdouts with Doughty and with P.K. Subban, and then a guy, an agent who's in the Newport Sports umbrella, Mark Guy, is Ryan O'Reilly's agent. So they're certainly aware that there's a bit of a trend there with some of the top guys who've held out and missed some camp, missed some games. I just don't think they want to let that affect the negotiations. They have a price tag that they've placed on Alex Pietrangelo, and obviously it can change somewhat from what they have in their mind. But I don't know that, obviously, since there's not a deal done, they're not willing to meet Alex Pietrangelo's price at this point. So I just think this is something that it could drag out a little bit longer. And as you say, the fear of a holdout because of Newport's recent history is certainly there.
I mean, sticking with the Blues defense, they signed Jay Bouwmeester to a 5-year, $27 million contract extension this offseason. When the Blues acquired Bouwmeester from Calgary, was it their intention all along to try and sign him to a long-term contract?
Yeah, for sure. You know, sometimes teams, don't say a lot about a guy when they acquire him. Hey, let's just let this play out. We'll see how he plays. We'll take it from here. But right away, Doug Armstrong said, this is a guy who, he has another year left on his contract, but he's a guy who we want here long-term. And he only played a handful of games with the Blues. I think it was 12 or 13 after the trade. Obviously you guys know Jay Bouwmeester doesn't do anything absolutely flashy, but the Blues have been looking for a partner for Alex Pietrangelo, and Jay Bouwmeester appears to be that guy. He skates as well as anybody in the league in the back end, and he and Alex Pietrangelo in that short time gained a pretty good chemistry. So Doug Armstrong got those talks going, and they found a happy medium rather quickly on a five-year extension. So he's for sure a guy, even dating back 10 months before the deal was actually made, when the Blues were going after him, they felt like if they could get him, he's a guy they wanted around for a while.
Jeremy, along those same lines, once they do sign, assuming they do sign Alex Pietrangelo to a contract, the Blues are going to have somewhere in the ballpark of about $25 million wrapped up on their defense. Any fear in the organization they have too much money allocated to the back end?
I don't think so. That's been, you know, what they've kind of built around for several years. I think even when John Davidson came in 2006 with the previous ownership group, and they said, hey, look, this isn't going to be a quick fix. We're going to do it through the draft, and we're going to build from the goalie out. I think that's kind of been the philosophy, and it's been the same with Doug Armstrong. And you know, they draft Alex Pietrangelo number 4 overall, and they make the trade for Kevin Shattenkirk, bringing him in. And those guys were in their entry-level deals, and now it's time for them to be paid. So, you know, the money's going to go up. The cost is going to go up for some of those guys. But they still feel like they have a good group of forwards, and it's not like they're shortchanging the payroll on the forwards to build up that blue line. I think they've got it pretty well spread out. But, you know, when you have names like Shattenkirk and Pietrangelo, who are two of the young puck-moving defensemen who have put up points earlier in their career, it's going to cost. And then you bring in a Jay Bouwmeester, and it adds to it. So I don't think there's any fear right now in that. They feel like they're doing it the right way.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking about the Blues offseason. Jeremy, the moves that the Blues made were not restricted to the defense. They certainly made some moves up front, chief among them the trading of David Perron to the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for Magnus Piarvi. What was the Blues' motivation for moving Perron, and what are they hoping to get out of Piarvi this year?
Well, there's a couple reasons for the trade. You can't overlook the fact that they needed to shed some salary because at that time I think they still had Chris Stewart unsigned. They might have had Jake Allen still unsigned at that point, but both of those have now signed. And then Alex Pietrangelo, who we've been talking about, still unsigned. So David Perron had a cap hit. I want to say it was in the $3 million range, $3.5 million, somewhere there. And so they needed to shed that to get these guys in the fold. Also, they really feel like Vladdy Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz are young guys who are ready to step up, and they need more ice time, both 5-on-5 and on the power play. And David Perron is a guy who you know, deserves that type of ice time, I think. And in order to get the time to Vladdy and Jaden, they felt like you could kill two birds with one stone. If you did move a David Perron, you lose the salary, you give more ice time to those guys. And then also you bring in a guy in Piarvi who's, you know, maybe he hasn't up to the hype of being a top 10 pick from a couple years ago, but he's improved his two-way game. And he's had chemistry with a guy like Patrick Berglund, a center for the Blues. They both played for Sweden at the World Championship and racked up some points together. So I think it gives them a chance to put Piarvi and Berglund together and see what they can do.
Jeremy, you mentioned Jaden Schwartz, and you mentioned Patrick Berglund, and that actually leads in perfectly to my next question about Derrick Roy, because the St. Louis Blues made a minor splash in free agency by acquiring him off of the free agency market. What role is Derrick Roy going to play based on the fact that the St. Louis Blues are pretty heavy at the center position?
They are, but for years, guys, they've lacked the playmaker. And, you know, I'm not saying that Derrick Roy is one of the top 5 or 10 playmakers in the league. You know, he put up 40-plus assists 4 years in Buffalo, and the Blues haven't had a player like that. They have the big body, drive to the net, shoot the puck type guys like David Backes and Patrick Berglund. And when you're going up against the LAs and the San Jose's of the world, that makes perfect sense, and it's worked for the Blues. But they've lacked a guy who with the vision, who can move the puck around, who can hang on, you know, let Chris Stewart find a lane, get him the puck, and score. So bringing Derrick Roy in, I think, is a transition for the Blues to bring in a guy who can have those types of skills and make Chris Stewart, I mentioned him, a better player. Chris Stewart is a guy who scored 28 goals back-to-back seasons a few years ago, He had a disappointing year 2 years ago with 15. He led the team with 18 in the lockout shortened year last year, but he just didn't have that consistency. He scored in bunches, and so they're hoping that by putting Derrick Roy and Chris Stewart together, there's a little bit of a different chemistry than Chris Stewart has had with guys like Pat Kirkland and David Backus.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking about the St. Louis Blues.
Jeremy, goaltending has been a strength for the Blues for the past number of years, with their organization boasting depth that would be the envy of other NHL teams. Can Brian Elliott, Yaroslav Halak, and Jake Allen coexist, especially given reports during last year's playoffs of a blow-up between Halak and coach Ken Hitchcock?
Yeah, not all three of them. I mean, that was an awkward situation last year when they had three on the roster for quite some time, but the Blues didn't have any other choice. You know, Yaro was dinged up with a groin injury. Brian Elliott was suffering poor play. And Jake Allen, he was the best of the three, but you just can't carry three goaltenders. So you come back this year. Halak has spent the summer in St. Louis. That's the first time in 4 years he's done that. He usually stays in Slovakia. He's in good shape. He's down to a 9.4% body fat. Ken Hitchcock has said that he's our guy, but it's not an 80-20 situation. We're looking at more like a 55-45, maybe at best a 60-40. In favor of Halak. And then Brian Elliott, they still like him. He had a tremendous second half of the season last year, but they look at him kind of as that second guy. And Jake Allen, for as good as he played last year, he signed a deal that's a two-way deal this year. So it looks like he's going to start in the AHL with the Chicago Wolves. And then he's a one-way deal next year. And this is the final season contracts for Halak and Elliott. So this is a big year in the net for the Blues to see kind of how it unfolds. But, you know, without having played a game, it's going to be Yarrow for the most part. Elliott's going to pick up some of the slack, and if anything happens to one of those guys, they're going to have Jake Allen and the minors ready to come up.
Jeremy, this is the third year in St. Louis for head coach Ken Hitchcock, and if you look at his recent track record in Columbus and in Philadelphia before that, that seems to be the time, the third year is sort of the time when he seems to run into troubles in the dressing room. Have you seen any signs or heard any rumblings that the players may be tiring of playing for such a demanding, detail-oriented coach in Hitchcock?
No, I don't think so, and you know, I'm familiar with Ken Hitchcock's reputation at other places, and I did not know him then. I didn't know him in Philadelphia. I didn't know him in Columbus. I didn't know him until he got into St. Louis. But when I met him, he had talked about, you know, mellowing a little bit, understanding kind of the big picture, and you know, different things were important to him. So I don't want to come out and say he's a different person than he was 10 years ago, because I can't make that type of statement. But the person that I deal with on a daily basis is only interested in winning and helping guys improve. And obviously, when you come in like you did and have success right away, and the team goes to the second round of the playoffs, and that's the first time that's happened in 10 years, things are all hunky-dory. Well, then last year, when things didn't go as well and they got knocked out in the first round, you know, do guys start to question things? I'm sure it pops up a little bit. But I think, for the most part, this roster realizes what Ken Hitchcock has done, how familiar he is with the game, how, you know, I mean, look, he's on the Team Canada staff. It's just what he's done in the game, I think you can't do anything but respect it. And these young Blues players who haven't done anything in their careers, you know, just need to understand that, hey, coaches are going to be demanding, but this guy wants to win. And I think for the most part, these guys realize that.
Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you up in Winnipeg a little more often from here on out.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, Jeremy. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. 10 or so minutes before the top of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a big thank you to our good friend Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download both on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course the home of Illegal Curve, illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my usual colleague Ezra Ginsberg and filling in for the vacationing Richard Pollock, Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers.
You know, I thought the Jeremy Rutherford interview was always a good one, but I thought what was particularly interesting was that he said Yaroslav Halak's body fat is down to 9.6%. Ez, what do you think your body fat is down to?
Saw that joke coming from a mile away.
I would say it's probably... I would say in the vicinity of 96%.
I would say the better question is, what is Ezzy's body muscle up to? Yeah. You know, flip it on its head there.
Yeah. You know. I wish I could say that I gained 18 pounds and that I was up to 196. Unfortunately, I gained 5 pounds and I'm up to 230.
Unfortunately, so. That was when you were 15 years old or something. Yeah. It's okay. We love you anyways, Ezzy. Aren't you playing hockey tonight?
I am, yeah.
Ezzy's back in the bigs.
Yeah, at the Iceplex, friend David Safer is having his wedding social, so there's going to be some hockey beforehand. It's going to be good times.
Mm-hmm. Should be.
Yep. Shout out to David and his fiance Alex.
Yes, of course. Yeah, very nice of you. Good shout out. Yep. Yesterday on TSN, we interviewed James Duthie yesterday on HNL.
Yep.
Yesterday, he had an exclusive interview with Roberto Luongo. Luongo's first interview since the Corey Schneider trade took effect, and Luongo regained his position as the number one goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks for the foreseeable future. You know, your impressions on the interview from what you saw, did you see a guy there who was fully committed to returning to the Vancouver Canucks, or a guy who still had a fair bit of apprehension over the entire situation?
I thought the interview itself was fascinating. But, you know, to your point, Drew, the end of the interview, he said this: right now I'm in Vancouver and I'm 100% committed to that team. And I like Roberto Luongo, but I have to tell you, I was not convinced that he was 100% committed to that team. So, you know, it was interesting, but you can still see. And the thing I appreciate is his honesty and his candor, because he's not hiding it. He's not pretending like, yes, he's not rah-rah Vancouver Canucks. He clearly thought, and I mean, he said it in he used the divorce analogy. I had moved on. Only problem is she didn't. She wanted me back. So, I mean, he's clearly still, there's still a hurt there, and he's being honest about it, and he's still processing it. But he knows that he's a big boy who's making big boy money, and at the end of the day, he's the number one goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks. He's just not 100% committed. He said it, but I don't buy it yet.
Ezzy, what do you think happens in this situation? You know, Luongo comes in, let's say he comes out and he's average to start the year, or the team is average to start the year, because this isn't the Vancouver Canucks that were the juggernaut of a couple of years ago. This isn't the Stanley Cup contender Vancouver Canucks. To me, I think their window, if it hasn't closed completely, it's certainly shut to some degree. So this isn't as good of a team as was 2 years ago. What happens if he comes out, the team struggles, and he ends up as the focal point for the derision of the crowd? You know, is the Roberto Luongo a long-term goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks?
Vancouver Canucks, Drew, are still a very good hockey team. And you know, I agree with you that they might not be a Stanley Cup contender, but they're still a good hockey team. And Roberto Luongo has never been an average goaltender. He's never been mediocre. And the reason why he wasn't getting a lot of starts was because Corey Schneider was pushing him. Now, this is my take on this. And, you know, James Duthie did a great job interviewing Roberto Luongo. Roberto Luongo now knows that he's the number one goaltender, and he doesn't have someone who is pushing him for that number one spot right now. So he has that confidence. He knows that he's not going to get traded this year. He's not going to be the subject of trade talks. Now, Roberto Luongo in the interview admitted that he was surprised that the Canucks traded Corey Schneider to the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, he said
he admitted that. Why wouldn't he be surprised? He thought he was moving. He thought he was going to another team. He mentioned he was blacking out, Drew. But to have the confidence to know that you're not going to be traded and all of this is behind you, I think has to give you peace of mind. And I do think he's 100% committed to the Vancouver Canucks. He knows where he's going to be, and he doesn't have to look behind his back anymore.
You know, it's interesting, as we were in New Jersey during the draft, and I know how we felt when we were sitting there on the draft floor and we hear, you know, Gary Bettman go up to the podium and say, "I have a trade to announce." The crowd starts getting on him. He goes, "No, you're going to want to hear this." And he announces Cordy Schneider has been traded to the, you know, the New Jersey Devils. We looked at each other. We were all shocked.
Well, everybody said, "Wow." I mean, yeah. I was at the Shark Club for the Winnipeg Jets draft party.
Yeah.
And I mean, arguably the announcement of that trade got as big of a reaction as the Winnipeg Jets draft selections, that everyone goes, I mean, it was just like an explosion of news entered the room, and everyone goes, whoa, like,
yeah, exactly.
How did that happen?
And Luongo said in the interview that he was sitting down with the owner of the Canucks, and he was chatting about, he said he was watching the draft, and he said, okay, let's turn the TV off, and you know, right at the time he said we traded Corey, his phone started to blow up, of course, because people are saying, wow, this is unbelievable, blah, blah, blah. But it's really interesting to see the kind of the play-by-play of how it happened for Luongo, knowing where we were and the buzz that was in New Jersey at that time. So it's quite interesting to see how the whole thing transpired.
I think the emotions in this entire situation are still raw. I think they're right at the surface. And I mean, there's the old saying that time heals all wounds. I don't think enough time has passed here to successfully heal these wounds yet. I think these are still raw emotions on display, and I think that's going to be the case, you know, throughout the course of the season. I mean,
I don't agree with that.
Really? And
no, I don't agree with that. I mean, at this point, you know, it's been what, a month and a half since the Corey Schneider trade to the New Jersey Devils, and Roberto Luongo is in Florida. He's, you know, back in BC. He's training for the season. I mean, sure, he might have some animosity towards Mike Gillis. He might have some animosity towards Aquilini, the owner of the Vancouver Canucks. But at this point, I mean, he's not going anywhere. I mean, I think that the way Roberto Luongo has handled this is admirable, and we talked about that yesterday, Drew, with James Duthie. But I think, you know, heading into this season, for the first couple of weeks after the season, it was probably a bit of a shock, not only to himself, but, you know, the franchise and the city and everything with, you know, a new coach coming in. But I don't think that, you know, Luongo is, I mean, this is a big year for him too. I mean, you know, this is the first time in a while where he's got the number one goaltender position and he's got the Olympics coming up. Mm-hmm. I really believe that this is in the past. And I think, you know, we'd all agree that's a good thing, because we've been talking about this for what, 2 years now. So, you know, I think finally it's nice to know for him that he doesn't have to fight for that number one spot anymore.
I can't see how Roberto Luongo's relationship with general manager of the Canucks, Mike Gillis, is ever going to be repaired. The way that Gillis jerked him around for the entire year.
Right, but he doesn't have to worry about that. All he has to do is show up and do his job. He doesn't have to even talk to Mike Gillis if he doesn't want to.
And I suspect he's probably not
Tortorella.
And I suspect he's not that eager to do so. New head coach John Tortorella. I mean, you know, if Tortorella sort of brings in that same system from New York that he had there, I mean, the goaltender is a key component, is probably the most key component of the system that he had employed in New York. I don't know if he's going to adopt that same system. That's yet to be seen, of course. But I do think that I think it's very helpful for Luongo that it's a new head coach in there. If he had come back and it was still Gillis and it was still Vigneault, I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Alain Vigneault by any stretch, but I'm saying if he had come back and it's almost like the same guards are patrolling the jail, it would have been a bigger problem than the fact that it's now Tortorella and he's got a fresh start ahead of him as well. So that's, I think, a little bit easier for Roberto Luongo.
And I think the fans will embrace him. I mean, as you said, Drew, they have no choice. I mean, who else is going to be there's nobody else to be the number one goaltender in Vancouver right now.
Yeah.
So the truth is the fans know that they have to back him up. There's no opportunity for booing him. I mean, obviously, if he plays poorly, you can. He's not going to be untouchable. But the point is that you have to handle him a little bit with kid gloves at this point.
If Canucks fans, Dave, one second here. If Canucks fans are going to boo Roberto Luongo, then they're not real fans, because Roberto Luongo got them to the Stanley Cup Finals within a game of winning the Stanley Cup. He's been a fantastic goalie. He was a gold medal winning goalie for Team Canada in 2010. He's still an elite goaltender. There's, you know, he has, I think, you know, been, you know, pretty tough. He's shown tough skin throughout this entire situation. But, I mean, and again, you know, the fact that the Roberto Luongo again, and everybody's heard this by now, the fact that he came out and said my contract sucked, I loved that.
Sort of
that nice. Showed that he was human, and he was saying, you know what? You know, Mike, I get paid a lot of money. The fact that he told James Duffy that he was willing to void his contract shows you that he wanted to put that behind him.
He was going
to
walk away from $35 million.
40.
He, at this point, I truly believe that Roberto Luongo wants to focus on the rest of his career. He's 33 years old, I believe, 33, 34 years old. So he's probably got, you know,
34.
5-6 years left of, I would say, top-notch hockey. Maybe he can...
Too bad his contract's 12 years.
Right. Well, no, he's not finishing that contract. But, you know, you look at Marty Brodeur at 41, 42 years old. Not many guys can do that. Roberto Luongo is one of those guys. So maybe let's give him another 7-8 years, and he's playing into 41 or 42. I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to focus on that and put all of this stuff behind him. And I think that, you know, the fact that he has been tweeting about it and joking about it shows that that's how he's coping with it. And, you know, fortunately, again, he doesn't have to deal with that anymore because it's been repaired.
We'll see. Only time will tell what happens in Vancouver this year, but it'll certainly be, I think a lot of eyes in the hockey world will be on that situation as the season unfolds. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290.
Great song.
I'll tell you what, boys. The best thing about not having Richard here, Richard's very domineering over the music selections on the show. I think, you know, he seems to think he's got some sort of hammer over the intro and extra songs.
I assume that Richard just does Bruce Springsteen all the time.
He would do that, but, you know, it's nice to have a more, you know, democratic, you know, discussion about the songs that should be played coming in and out of break, or just leaving it up to the expert that we have behind the board here in Timmy.
I can attest to having been on a driving trip with Richard, and I can tell you that anybody who's on the current trip is now listening to the All Bruce Springsteen channel on SiriusXM.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, though, Tim always plays good songs.
Exactly.
Richie was watching Tim's band play last Saturday night. And, you know, Sublime. I mean, classic. Summertime, great song.
Like Santeria?
No, that was that was Summertime.
No, he's saying the song.
Song was Summertime. Sorry, yeah. I was confused as to where you were going with that.
Did you really think it was Lana Del Rey, a little Summertime Sadness? Like,
I don't even know what that is.
A little too contemporary.
I don't know. You just blew my mind with that comment. I'm not sure what that means at all, but we might have to play it coming back from the next break. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
NHL news and notes.
Couple odds and ends from around the NHL world this week. A little bit of news, thankfully. Thank God. Otherwise, it would have been a really dull show of just us talking music for the whole time. Nobody wants that. Montreal Canadiens sign Douglas Murray to a one-year, $1.5 million contract. He finished last year with the Pittsburgh Penguins. They acquired him at the trade deadline in exchange for in exchange from the San Jose Sharks. Obviously, the Penguins' playoff run did not work out as they had hoped, so they let Douglas Murray go. Canadians pick him up. Ezzy, your thoughts on this? Do you like this for the Habs?
Yeah, I do. Alexei Emelin is going to be injured to start off the season.
Tore his ACL.
So there is a hole to fill there. And Douglas Murray is all defense. He only had a few points last year, and he's never been an offensive defenseman. He's one of the most physical guys. Douglas Murray is one of those guys that forwards hate to go up against because he's so physical and he loves to use his body. Huge guy. But I like the signing, and it was a 1 year deal. And you know he's towards the end of his career. He's getting up there in age, and you know he's got a few years left. You know, probably in the NHL. And you know I like that signing. And the Habs defense, you know, with the exception of PK Subban, you know, was a little suspect there in the playoffs. The Habs went out in the first round pretty easily last year. And Douglas Murray, it didn't quite work out for him in Pittsburgh. And they really brought him in to, you know, for the playoffs, right? Along with Jerome McGinley and Brendan Morrow. And I think it's pretty funny that none of those guys are coming back to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're all, you know, going to other teams. Well, Brendan Morrow hasn't signed yet. Right. But, you know, I like that move. And for the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, they're you know, they're trying to get a little bit bigger, a little bit more tough. And you know, this is, I think, a one-year deal that I like.
That's what he's bringing to the Canadians, because he's not bringing, like you said, he's not bringing any offense.
And they don't need offense from the defense. Right. I mean, P.K. Subban and Markov are, you know, two of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL.
He's certainly not fleet of foot. I would say that would, he might move like molasses.
They say slow and steady wins the race, and I think in that instance, he really exemplifies both those terms.
A little bit smaller in terms of height, but he sort of reminds me as a, you know, as sort of Hal Gill-like.
Yeah, it's funny
physical
that you compared...
Physical and slow.
No, it's funny, though, that you compare him to, you know, one of the biggest, tallest guys in the NHL. Well, another guy that hasn't gotten a contract. But, yeah, no, it's a similar type of defenseman in the sense that they're extremely physical and they play a shutdown role. But
Hal Gill, 6'7", 240, according to HockeyDB. Hal Gill, 6'7", 245.
Or he's like 6 feet, 6'1".
6'3", 245.
So a little bit taller. But yeah, Murray, you know, is going to give the Montreal Canadiens, you know, a third pairing defenseman and possibly even second pairing while Emelin is out. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised, actually, that the Penguins didn't re-sign him. They ended up going with Rob Scuderi, bringing him back, and I think he got a four-year contract.
He did.
So that when he got the four-year contract, that pretty much, you know, told me that they weren't going to be bringing Murray back. But, you know, Murray, for the Montreal Canadiens, I think it's good. If you think back to, you know, Yaroslav Spacek and some of the other guys that the Canadiens have had, you know, that type of defenseman, a guy that is going to give them, you know what you're going to get with Douglas Murray, and he's going to give you, you know, solid defense. And yeah, he's not the best skater, but he's a guy that, you know, you feel confident putting up against the other team's best players. And even if you need to put him in your top pair at certain points, he can do that because he's got the veteran, you know, leadership and experience. So
yeah, put him into the right situation. He's a big physical guy. He's a big physical body who's going to, I mean, you're going to feel him on the ice. So, yep. you know, when he's on the ice against you, you know that you're going to, you know, it's going to certainly affect your mindset. He's not going to do anything exciting, but he's just, you know, he's a decent body. He's a decent depth defenseman.
You know, Drew, we're going to talk about body checking later on in the show for a little bit. And, you know, it's place in hockey. We were going to get into it last week, but we didn't have a chance. But you talk about, you know, body checking. I mean, that's his bread and butter, Douglas Murray. I mean, he's the type of guy that is going to be all over you, in your face, cross-checking you in front of the net. I mean, that's his game. And, you know, I think there's still very much a role for that in the NHL.
Yeah, and it's really odd because you're actually eating a loaf of bread with butter right now on the air. So, you know, again, there's a lot of symmetry going on there. Other news and notes from around the NHL. Timo Salani in this coming week is supposedly going to decide on his return to the Anaheim Ducks or not. He said in a statement earlier this week that playing time is a factor in his decision. I expect to see Timu return to the Anaheim Ducks. I'm not sure he's going to get all the playing time he wants. Do you see that becoming an issue in the course of the season, Dave, or do you just think that Timu will be the loyal soldier that he is?
You know what? It's a tough call because he's in such good physical shape, even at his current age, that I could see him, and he's still an elite player. I mean, he's still getting a ton of points for that team. So he's not going to want to be adopting third or fourth line minutes. He's saying, I want second line time, and I don't want to really take anything less because that's what, you know, my physical condition really kind of merits. And it's interesting.
He only had 24 points last year. I mean, he had 24 points in 46 games with the Ducks. So
yeah, that's not bad, though. Not terrible.
It's not second line. That's not second line minutes. Doesn't deserve second line minutes at that rate of performance, especially given the guys that the Anaheim Ducks have ahead of them on the wing. Their young guys, their Emerson Edoms and their Kyle Palmieri's.
Emerson Edom is at this point isn't going to take that position. It's Palmieri is the guy that played second line right wing when Salani wasn't there. But you got to believe that Timo Salani right now, and playing time is an issue, but you'd have to believe that if he wasn't going to come back, he would have made that decision a long time ago. He's thinking right now very hard, and I don't think that there's any issues financially. I think that's going to work itself out. I don't believe that. I just think that he is really taking a lot of time to make the decision. But the reality is that you've got Corey Perry and Getzlaff on that top line, and Jacob Silverberg will probably end up, you know, filling the left wing role in place of Bobby Ryan there. But you've got Kyle Palmieri, you've got Andrew Cogliano, and you know, guys, let's be honest. When you're talking Teemu Selänne and you're talking Jaromir Jagr, you know, at this point, they might have to accept the fact that they're not second line right wingers, or you know. So I think Selänne. It's interesting that that story came out, and I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I think that, you know, 24 points in 48 games or so. He might have missed a couple games there, but Teemu Selänne, you know, is not you know, a point a game player. And the Anaheim Ducks right now have a lot of youth in their lineup. You've got Devontae Smith-Pelly is another guy that's on the right wing position. So I mean, they're already thinking, you know, down the road. This is probably Solani's last year or second last year. So you're right. I mean, he might have to accept a lesser role.
Maybe second line, maybe third line, second power play unit or something right. Along those lines. Or have him, you know, I think on the power play, he can certainly still be effective. Very effective. 5-on-5, I just don't know that he should be blocking the development of a younger
right. Player
at this point.
And he's still got the wheels, but he's lost a step.
Well, I mean, he's 43 years old.
And Jagr has lost a step, but the thing is, Dave, these guys, even having lost a step, it's funny. Jaromir Jagr last year, even with having lost a step, he still is impossible to knock off the puck, mm-hmm. and he was still getting points, and he was playing in the play. You know, like, so these guys, even with that lost step, they can contribute, but, I mean, they might have to accept a lesser role if they want to continue their careers.
I think there's two interesting things. One is the fact that, how does this impact the game, the Anaheim game and the Jets breakdown, because right now the Anaheim game is an A game in the ABC range. We have that on LegalCurve.com. I think it was in Tuesday.
You're talking about in the pricing structure.
The pricing structure. But really, that's how, a lot how people base their game selection on is that based on that.
Everyone
but
knows the Teemu game is a very
is
popular
A game.
Game.
Right. But that game is not necessarily an A game without Teemu Selänne in it. The other thing of note, and it was in today's papers, is the fact that we're already talking about the next generation of Selänne.
His son.
So yep. There was an interesting article on NHL.com.
His son's playing junior hockey.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see how there's already now the next generation with the Selänne name on the back that will be, you know, potentially entering the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. Another note from Anaheim is that their defenseman that they signed this offseason, Sheldon Surre, is out for probably up to about 4 to 6 months. He had some wrist surgery. I think he tore a ligament or tore a muscle in his wrist while working out this offseason, and so he'll be out for a significant period of time. You know, what does that do to the, I mean, you look at the Ducks defense, and it doesn't screen to me as being a real solid part of their team. I mean, Cam Fowler, I would say, is probably their best defenseman, and Francois Beauchemin had a very good year. But after that, you're getting, ew.
The Ducks defense was very good last year, actually, and Sheldon Surre is a big loss for them. I mean, Sheldon Surre rejuvenated his career after, you know, going down to the AHL and coming back up, and that's a big loss for the Anaheim Ducks. And they went out, and as you guys know, they signed Mark Fistrick, who is another guy, a defenseman, but he's not going to replace Sheldon Surre's offense. So that's a big loss for them.
Well,
you know, he was playing a little bit with Beauchemin, playing a little bit with Lucas Abiza, and then Fowler. You know, I mean, they have a pretty good top four there, and without Surre there, you're asking Fistrick to come in and play top four when he's more of a kind of sixth or seventh defenseman. He's another guy all about the body checking, very physical defenseman. But when I saw that, I mean, that's a big loss for the Ducks.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Everybody on the Ducks defense that sort of played better than I thought they were going to play last year is bumped up one slot, and I don't know that they can necessarily afford that. So that might be a team to keep an eye on in terms of acquiring, if there's a team that, you know, needs to dump a defenseman in the course of the last couple weeks of the offseason here. Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm looking your way. That the Ducks might be a destination that a player could go. The Leafs have 7 defensemen under contract right now, still haven't signed Cody Franson, and that's a big RFA still waiting to get a contract there in Toronto. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about body checking. As he mentioned, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. The song you were talking about before, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little Lana Del Rey.
Okay.
This is what the kids are listening to these days.
You wouldn't know what the kids were listening to if they were playing it right in front of you.
I'm very contemporary in my music selection.
What are you talking about? Dave and I went to see Selena Gomez on Monday. It was a fantastic concert.
The night before we went to a rave. What are you talking about, Drew?
Yeah,
what we do.
I'll tell you what. There's one thing I like about Dave being in studio is I'm no longer the oldest guy on the show at this point.
Well,
in
maybe
time.
Not your actual age, but I would suggest that you're probably a little bit older than me.
You mean, what, like metaphysically or?
Yeah, metabiblically, actually.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. Whatever, maturity is a maturity issue.
That's a very good point.
Separate issue altogether.
I'm getting more...
Hey, Tim, who looks older, Drew or I? Come on, Tim, we're putting you on the spot. Let's go. Right now.
Remember who you have to spend every Saturday with, Tim, while you answer this question.
I'd prefer not to answer that, sorry.
Timmy.
The reality is, Dave is... like a fine wine, he's just going to get better with age.
There we go.
He's going to be like a George Clooney.
Oh,
George Clooney. I mean, does he age? That guy. He's still. I think he still wins like sexiest man. Of the year for
which is coincidental because I just win sexiest man of a Leo curve, which is not a bad award to win.
It's not tough, but.
Tell you what, Richard's never leaving again. I can assure you that when he hears the audio of this, I can assure you Richard is never leaving again. Some interesting comments
yes.
from the Canadian Medical Association earlier this week. They had their annual meeting on Wednesday, and the delegates at the Canadian Medical Association's annual meeting voted to, and I quote, condemn the complacency of NHL team owners when it comes to violence in the sport of hockey. I'd like to condemn the grandstanding of the Canadian Medical Association's delegates for sticking their nose in this issue. If they want to talk about concussions and they want to talk about research on concussions, I'm fine with that. But why are they talking about, why are they voting to condemn the complacency of NHL team owners for any reason aside from getting us to talk about and getting an article about written about it in the national newspapers?
And Drew, the problem with what the Canadian Medical Association, is doing here is it's misguiding the narrative. And the reality is that the NHL and Hockey Canada and Hockey Manitoba and, hockey organizations across Canada and the U.S. and, and elsewhere are doing a good job of addressing what's going on. Now, for them to come out and with these strong words, I think is dangerous. And, we know that Hockey Canada has raised the age in which body checking is allowed. Now there's a ban on body checking until the Bantam age group, which is 13. It used to be 12. That's across the board. So in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, everywhere, kids aren't going to be hitting until 13. It used to be 12, okay? And Ken Campbell wrote about this in the Hockey News, and we tried to get him on last week. Unfortunately, we couldn't, but this is what promoted this debate, and that's why we wanted to get everybody else's opinion who's listening, people that have played hockey, people that have kids in hockey. And, body checking in hockey is an essential part of the game. I think we'd all agree on that. If anybody remembers during the 2000 playoffs when the Devils won, Scott Stevens won the Conn Smythe Trophy because of his body checking, okay? And it was clean.
Well,
the problem...
It wouldn't be clean today. It was clean back then, but it wouldn't be clean today.
I don't agree with that, but we'll...
No. I mean, you can dispute the rule, but there's no
if you're talking about the Eric Lindros hit, which I think you are...
If he laid out that hit today, he'd be suspended for a lengthy number of games.
It's quite possible, but what I'm saying is Scott Stevens was a clean hitter in general.
Back in his day, he was considered
a clean
hitter.
So what I'm saying is that, to be a clean hitter, just like Douglas Murray, like Mark Fistrick, like Zach Bogosian, Mark Stewart on the Jets is another physical defenseman, Jacob Trouba, body checking is an essential part of the game, and to pick... body checking out as to correlate body checking and concussions, I think is a big problem. Yes, guys get concussions from body checks, but most concussions come from hits from behind, from hits to the head, and that is not something that isn't being addressed. Bill Daly came out and talked about that. These are the guys that are addressing this, and I'm not, coming out and people are going to say, I'm just channeling my inner Don Cherry. But the reality is hockey is a physical game. And yes, it does get violent.
If the Canadian Medical Association had come out with a resolution that condemned fighting in hockey.
Right.
I would consider that a lot more legitimate than coming out with a resolution that condemns violence in hockey without specifying what that violence is. That's okay. Just them, I think, trying okay. to make to get some headlines more than anything. Condemning fighting in hockey, I'd probably be okay with that because I think that the place for hockey and fight, right. Or for fighting in hockey has gone by the wayside. You right. and I tend to disagree
right.
on
right.
that.
And we've had Gary Lawless on the show before talking about that, and he would like it to be removed from the game. And, you know, the reality is fighting is not going to be removed from the game anytime soon.
I think it should be, we disagree.
All right, you're saying that you think it should be, but there's no indication that fighting will be removed from hockey. It's a unique part of hockey that's not going anywhere for the time being. Would you agree with that?
I would probably agree with that, but the reason I'd get rid of fighting is because I think the documentation about what hitting somebody in the head does to that person
right.
is pretty crystal clear at this right. point in time. I've never seen a report that you know, hitting somebody shoulder to shoulder really significantly affects the long-term health and the future life of that individual. Yeah, they'll get some aches and pains and everything, but that just comes with being a professional athlete.
Right.
I've never seen somebody get brain damage from a shoulder-to-shoulder hit.
Right, and you know, my issue is every time, you know, it comes up that, you know, we have to address violence in hockey, you know, a study comes out, whether it's a university study or the Canadian Medical Association, and we're not knocking the Canadian Medical Association. We're just knocking.
In this
okay,
instance.
Okay, in this instance, I think it's misguided what they're saying. And my point is that because fighting is in hockey now, it just is, I mean, that's a fact, I think every time this comes up that we should remove fighting, I think is misguided because what we should be working on is what we can control.
I don't think that is misguided. I think the Canadian Medical Association in this instance is talking about the wrong issue. If they want to talk about fighting in hockey,
right.
fine. I would agree with them. Yes, I think that they're within their rights, they're obviously within their rights, but I would agree that their resolution makes a lot of sense. About saying fighting in hockey, punching one person punching another person in the head, the Canadian Medical Association, if they came out and said that has no role, I'm okay with that. I'm on board with that. But to come out and condemn violence in hockey, and to condemn the complacency of NHL team owners is nothing but a pretty transparent attempt in my mind for them just to get some headlines right. and to get us talking about this. And for a group, I would think a group of doctors has something better to do. Go research what the effects of shoulder-to-shoulder hits are if you want to convince me. Don't just come out with a blanket statement.
Well, I think what you're getting at, Drew, ultimately, is that it's just a lazy way of doing things as opposed to being very specific and having an argument which you can focus on and which people could either be for or against. This is too generic. This is too general. I have no idea specifically what they're targeting. I just, like you, would say, well, okay, are they talking about all violence in hockey? Is a legitimate shoulder, you know, shoulder-to-shoulder hit the same as someone punching someone in the face, you know, from their statement, that's what you would kind of be led to believe versus your argument versus Ezzy's, you know.
Right, right. And I agree with you, Dave. And see, the issue is when a doctor uses their pulpit to make these comments, I don't think it advances the debate. And when you refer to an incident, which was one of the scariest incidents we've seen in professional hockey in a long time, that being Zdeno Chara's hit on Pacioretty, and everyone points to that hit, you know, and how they could have made more of an example of Zdeno Chara. I agree. I really do think that he probably should have been suspended for a little bit longer. And that, I think, is something that needs to be addressed and not, you know, saying that fighting should be removed from hockey or just generally saying hockey is a violent game. Of course hockey is a violent game. It's always been a violent game, an aggressive game. And if you're on the side of the debate that thinks fighting should be removed, or you think that hitting shouldn't be allowed in minor hockey until, let's say, 16 or even 18, you don't really have a grasp on hockey then. Because hockey is, by its very nature, an aggressive game that has elements of violence. Not everybody's violent, and you can, I mean, Wayne Gretzky made a career out of basically never being touched. So I mean, it's an element that you don't have to necessarily engage in, but whether you like it or not, body checking, you know, running a guy, at mid ice, clean body checking and fighting, where two guys know exactly what they're doing. I mean, when two guys drop their gloves, they know what they're getting into. Nobody is forcing them to fight. This is hockey here. This isn't if you want to play another sport where there is no chance that you're going to get a glove in the face. Then don't play hockey.
I'm with you up to your point about fighting. I think at this point in time in the NHL, given what we know about punching somebody in the head and the long-term effects it has, I think that the NHL is asking for legal troubles to not remove it from the game. I'm not saying get rid of body checking, because I think that is a ridiculous premise to go on, and that would change the game.
If they take body checking out of hockey, it's not hockey.
You can't take body checking out of hockey. A clean shoulder to shoulder hit,
yep,
is perfectly good and perfectly fine, and I would never say anything. I would not say anything different.
Right.
The NHL, I think, I agree with what they've done about getting rid of headshots.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I don't understand how you can get rid of headshots with your left hand, but at the same time with your right hand say, it's okay if you guys keep punching each other in the head. There is a disconnect in my perspective when those two things are compared to one another, but to say that the NHL is ignoring violence in hockey like the Canadian Medical Association did, and that they're complacent about violence in hockey, I think is unfair and grandstanding by that association.
The statistics prove that hits from behind and blows to the head cause proportionately way more concussions than fighting.
Well, what's a blow to the head if not fighting?
Well, a blow to the head is a guy, you know, what it's I'm like talking about elbow, is a hit to the head or whatever. And I mean, I always bring this back. I asked Chris King this question. This was, we were out for dinner one night. You were there. And I asked him about this, you know, fighting and hockey and the amount of concussions in hockey that are the result from two guys squaring off are significantly less, and he doesn't believe it's going to be taken out of hockey anytime soon. This is Chris King, okay, a guy that works for the NHL and has been there and done that. So, I mean, I always really take that to heart, because I'm not saying that, you know, this isn't going to be something that continues to be an issue. I think that we should focus on hits to the head, hitting from behind, educating young hockey players on how to hit properly, cleanly, and then try to reduce concussions that way.
Just to clarify Drew's point, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're not suggesting that a guy punching someone else in the face is causing the concussion. I think you're talking about the long-term ramifications of fighting overall.
Right,
correct?
Right.
Oh, I think that punching a guy in the head is also a good way to get a concussion.
Right, and that's why you got to have tons of respect for guys like Chris Thorburn and Anthony Peluso, who do the dirty work and stick up for the teammates.
Drew's saying in his mind he would get rid of that.
If the NHL is concerned about the hits to the head that come in a game that cause concussions, how can they say they're not concerned about the hits to the head that come with punching a guy in the head? Well, and I don't totally buy the argument that, oh, well, there's very few concussions that come from fighting. I don't totally buy that argument, and I refuse to accept that getting punched in the head is a good thing for somebody's long-term health.
I'm not saying that concussions don't come from fighting, but it's a fact that less concussions are happen with fighting than, I mean, it's
I mean I know that they might say it's a fact. I don't fully believe it.
You don't believe facts?
You know, if I don't believe the facts, or I don't believe the person who's telling me the facts, or I don't believe how they're reporting the facts may not be perfectly accurate, then they're not what I would describe as completely factual. There's certain things in life that are, there's no disputing. I don't fully believe when the reporting is questionable that you can consider it a fact. My point is, I think that punching somebody in the face is a bad thing for everybody. Body checking, legit, still should stay in the game of hockey.
We agree on that one.
Okay, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, filling in for the vacationing Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, there's a feature on ESPN.com called UniWatch, where a gentleman named Paul Lucas sort of goes through all the different changes and all the different sort of keeps the world abreast of everything that's happening in terms of uniforms in the big four sports, baseball, NBA, NFL, and the NHL. So he once a year he goes through the entire rankings, 1 through 122 of the professional sports teams that exist in North America, and he ranked the Winnipeg Jets uniform number 18 in the NHL. 18 out of 30 in the NHL is how he described the Winnipeg Jets uniform. Here's his comments a bit, which is down two places from last year. I'm not quite sure what would change between one year and the other. I guess somebody came out with a new uniform that he liked. Here's his comment. I've tried really hard to like this uniform. There's nothing to dislike about it, but it feels too generic, too plain, too meh. By the way, I love that meh is now an appropriate word to be used in an article. But
the only thing, first and foremost, the only thing that's generic and plain is that comment. What does that mean? First of all, the first season of Jets 2.0, I believe the Jets sold more jerseys than anybody. Is that correct?
They were the number one selling merchandise team, but that's...
Hold on. Okay, so they're the number one merchandise team in the NHL, and he ranks them 18.
Well,
that's not a disconnect. What does that guy's opinion matter? I mean, come on. I mean, the Jets logo, the jersey is terrific. I mean, they can't keep them on the shelves. People buy them and wear them everywhere. People that don't even live in Winnipeg that are fans of the Jets. I mean, that means nothing. I mean, it's such a subjective ranking of somebody who, you know, I don't even know who that guy is.
He is very well known for doing uniforms and that sort of thing.
He's a uniform analyst.
So if he's a uniform analyst, could someone show him how many jerseys that the Winnipeg Jets have sold, and maybe that would change his opinion?
Well, hold on. Two things. One is, I don't think it matters because I think it's based on the aesthetic, not on sales.
Yeah, but art school here where we're
it's just, hey, you said this is the dog day of the summer. I mean, we're talking about it. But the other thing is, what's interesting, Drew, you were saying how you don't know how the Jets drop down. Apparently, the Oilers fans must have mounted some sort of serious campaign because the Oilers moved from like 26th to 14th. So they moved up 12 spots. So
they did move up 12 spots. They did. You're exactly right. I beg the Winnipeg Jets fans, please don't focus on this.
No. And just to tell you guys, for those who are interested, we had an interview. Remus actually did it when they did the jersey reveal on the Air Force Base. Yep. 17 wing. Michael Remus and I were there for that. And we had an interview with the Reebok designer, Dominic Filion, whose team designed the Winnipeg Jets jersey. So I'm going to tweet out that article right now. You can follow it on @AllelCurve. And it's just interesting how they came about it, because we have to remember, these things usually take years. And these guys did it in like 6 months. So like, you know, you can say whatever you want about the jersey. And the truth is, I love the home jersey. I like the dark home jersey. I'm not a huge fan of the away jersey.
I like the white one better than the dark one.
And see, the thing
and
is,
it's totally subjective. You know, that's all point.
Yeah, and
are we biased, Dave?
Are we biased because we're from Winnipeg and we cover the Jets? Sure. I mean, but I think that even if I wasn't from Winnipeg, which is kind of difficult because I am, so it's kind of weird to reverse that fact. But I mean, it's a classic logo. I mean, and it's, you know, it draws from the Royal Air Force and it's got the maple leaf. I think it's great.
I think his comment is it's just plain and it's boring. It's totally subjective. This guy, that's what he does. He does a lot of these.
The irony of that is, had this uniform, say this uniform was 50 years old, as opposed to being 3 years old, I bet you he'd say it's iconic in its simplicity.
There's no question.
As opposed to boring in its blandness.
You're 100% correct, because essentially all the, in fact, the only jersey he knocked, which is funny, is the Chicago Blackhawks. That was the only original six team that didn't get in the top six of his selections. I think the Blackhawks were ninth.
The Canadiens were first. The Bruins were second. The Red Wings were third. The Rangers were fourth. Yeah.
And the Leafs were fifth?
The Leafs were sixth, actually. The Flyers were fifth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you've got all the original six teams up
there. And the Blackhawks were eighth.
Oh, eighth. Okay. Yeah. But which is funny because I love the Blackhawks uniform.
Our buddy Craig Custance, also with ESPN, wrote a response to this. You know, obviously, I think this whole thing is a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But his response was that the team that Craig Custance picked as being too low in the rankings was the Blackhawks at number eight. He said the second team that was too low, the runner-up in the too low category, were the Winnipeg Jets. Here's Craig Custance. The Jets jersey is a jersey that deserves to be in the top half of the league at least, especially considering the upgrade over the franchise's previous existence, which included some really bad Atlanta Thrashers jerseys. Rest in peace, Thrash. That's Craig Custance, our buddy with ESPN.com. Let's wrap up the show. Cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start with Dave Minuk.
My cheer is going to go to former Maple Leafs general manager Brian Burke, who slammed the archaic anti-gay laws of Russia. He's going to be the director of player personnel for the U.S. hockey team. And he said, look, do whatever you can to protest. He doesn't want to turn this into an issue, but he said, like, bring rainbow pens, paint rainbows on your fingernails. Just do it so they know that this is an unacceptable way of dealing with other human beings in this day and age.
I would agree with that comment. Ezra Ginsberg, cheer or jeer, my friend?
We talked about Roberto Luongo earlier in the show. I'm going to cheer Roberto Luongo for, you know, coming out and, you know, with that interview with James Duthie and really being candid and honest with, you know, with his opinions and thoughts, because he is such a fascinating guy. And I think, you know, he's gone through so much with, you know, not really knowing what his future held. So, you know, I really appreciate Roberto Luongo giving that two-part interview and, like, really, you know, showing what he's all about and giving the fans what they wanted. They wanted to hear what his thought process was, and he did that.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to jeer the NHL. I personally like Patrick Burke. We've had him on this show before. I mean, he's obviously been on the station a number of times, and his work through the You Can Play project is beyond commendable. But I'm not sure how he's qualified to take on the role of director of player safety in the NHL. I know he was a scout for a number of years with the Philadelphia Flyers. It, to me, just doesn't seem like it's the right fit, especially, you know, given the emphasis the NHL has been putting on player safety. So I'm going to jeer that hire for the time being. Hopefully he grows into the role, but right now, I'm not sure that's the proper fit for a guy like Patrick Burke, although I think the NHL is better off with him around and all the good work that the NHL and the You Can Play project do together. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guest, Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to you each and every week. You can also get it on tsn1290.ca and illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm away next week. Richie's back next week, so you guys will be able to hold down the fort. Dave, maybe we'll see you again. We'll see. We'll have to grade out your performance and see how you did.
Fair enough.
Dave always gets an A+.
For Dave Minuk of IllegalCurve.com, for my colleague Ezra Ginsberg here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.